Okay, we can start. I want to thank Arthur Zimmerman and Betty Pratt for joining us today. I explained to you that I'm on the history committee of Harvard Village Residents Association, and both of you have long histories in this neighborhood. So what I'm going to ask you to do is just give me names, ages, when you lived here, or with you, Arthur, it was your grandparents. Just as an introduction so that we can have that information, kind of some dates.
So, okay. Betty Pratt and Bill and I are here at 122 Major Street, and we've been here since 1983, and we lived 1 year before that at 266 Brunswick. And my mother lived at 255 Major Street just around 1917. That's the Varty family. And then Bill's mom was born on Brunswick, south of Ulster or near Ulster, I think, just in 1917 as well. So we started to remember all this when we moved here. And my family told me some interesting stories. And
And we're the interview was taking place at 122 Major, which is your home.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll come back. I would love to have some of those stories.
Okay.
I'm sure that you'll be able to fit them into some of these categories that we'll be discussing because you have a long history here.
Right.
Yeah. And
Arthur Zimmerman, I grew up at 514 Brunswick between DuPont and Wells for 60-odd years there. I'm 69 at the moment. My maternal grandmother lived at 124 Robert Street from 1922 till she died in 54. The family apparently... My mother was born in 1916 on Lower Markham Street, but her younger sister, 3 years younger, was born at 144 Robert Street. Haven't been able to confirm that, but that's the story. I've been around this neighborhood, I guess, all my life because of my grandmother.
Yeah, and that's why you're really a good candidate, because you've always lived close by. But for this project, it's because your grandmother was here.
Yeah.
And can you each, when you visited your grandmother, who lived in that house? How many people were there?
In my day, it was my grandmother plus a tenant up in the front room on the second floor.
Uh-huh.
And that was it, I think. And for a while, I think my aunt and her family lived there while they were trying to settle themselves. So that would be probably, oh gosh, I guess it'd be about 1944, 45, somewhere in there probably.
Yeah, yeah. And when you and your husband moved here, it was the two of you.
Yes, Bill works at the Royal Ontario Museum, and I was working there then too, so we had the connection to that, and we had both gone to U of T. And that was why we wanted to live nearby and walk to work. But my dad's generation, he had been an English teacher at Central Tech School, so in the 50s. And his best friends that he played poker with all through the years after that, when he moved on to other schools, were from Central Tech. So actually my first memories were visiting Central Tech when I was a little girl and seeing the art school and all the wonderful things at the open house they used to have once a year.
What brought the earlier generations here? Can you answer that? When you talk about earlier generations from your families?
I have to have Bill try and remember why his father was, his family was here. I'm not sure, because I know they moved to Bathurst and Lawrence after that, after about 1929. But I have been trying to find out what my Grandpa Vardy did, but we're pretty sure he worked for the Heintzman Piano Company or a furniture company, something nearby here. And Heintzman was over at the Junction at the time, but he might have worked somewhere else, and I'd have to look that up. And then they moved to the Beaches area
And where did your families originate, your family and Bill's family?
Well, Bill's from Sault Ste. Marie. Uh-huh. Bill's parents met here in Toronto during World War II, and his mother from here married and moved up to Sault Ste. Marie, where Bill was born. And he came down here to work and to be at U of T and eventually the ROM. And I'm from Leaside, so my dad got a new house in 1949 in Leaside, and they had all grown up in the Beaches area mostly.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what brought your family here?
I don't know specifically what brought them here. I know that my grandfather was born in a place called Lipnitsky in Belarus, and my grandmother was born in Vilna Gubernia. And the story was that my grandmother's brother had been a friend of my grandfather. Now, there's a fair distance between those two towns, so I don't know how that happened. But my grandmother was taken to Leeds to live with her sister when she was about 16, so that would be around 1900, by her father, who then went back to the old country. And my grandmother met my grandfather in Leeds, and he was a furrier, I think, even at that point. Why he came here, I don't know. They came here about 1910, and my grandfather, I've just been rereading the story, he knew Eli Herman, who was a not very good furrier at Girard and Bay Streets, according to what my mother said,
yeah.
And he needed help, and my grandfather, who was a furrier, came in and helped him. And eventually, I think my grandfather was a foreman or partner or semi-partner or something at Herman Furs. But why they came here specifically, I don't know. There may have been relatives in Toronto. My grandmother may have had relatives here. There was a Lazarus family that my mother talked about, but in the Junction. But
they chose to live here.
Yeah.
In this neighborhood.
Yeah, they came here.
Are you aware of... from your own experience, the different waves of immigration as they occurred in this neighborhood?
Not so much this neighborhood. When my mother was living here, there were a bunch of Jewish immigrants in the neighborhood. But
so
I don't know when
this was
Robert Street.
And what years are you talking about? Approximately.
Oh, it's got to be from the mid-20s through the mid-late-30s, I guess.
Okay, so it was at least 50% Jewish from what you think.
I don't know.
You don't know.
But they knew the Jewish people in the neighborhood.
Right.
Because I guess they all talk Yiddish together.
Yeah.
And probably not much else
in
those days.
Uh-huh.
The Golds on... Wilcox were good friends, and there were a few up and down the street that she mentioned the names of, but aside from that,
I think there were a lot of Jewish people living in this neighborhood at that time.
But waves, I couldn't tell.
But that point itself is significant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with all your years of visiting your grandparents, being in this neighborhood,
your grandmother
mm-hmm. okay yeah. thank you.
Grandfather died in 1929, just before the crash. Just at the time of the crash.
Yeah. But your grandmother stayed here for a long time.
Yeah.
Do you have any, since you've been here or known the neighborhood, any comments on the different waves of immigration, who has lived here, the changes that have occurred?
Yes, because we talk about the fish store that was on the corner of Harbord and Major, and we missed that. It closed when we came here in 1983. It wasn't there very long, but I remember the family that was there on the corner, and it was nice to have a useful store, a place to shop like that. And since then, so many restaurants have taken over. So that's a big change. And then my...
What do you remember about those owners?
I remember them in the white aprons and Jewish family.
The name just escapes me at the moment. I wasn't aware that it was a Jewish family.
But there were so many of them in there waiting to help you. Uh-huh. So it seemed like a big family. Uh-huh. And, of course, Harbert Bakery is still there, mm-hmm. and we really appreciate that.
I remember you could smell the fish on the street.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that was welcome or not.
Remember that?
Yeah, but the bakery makes up for it, I think, so that helps. Yeah. And, going back to my mom's family had just got married and moved here from Owen Sound before the First World War.
And what's your family's background, religion, nationality?
United Church, so my mom... when they lived at 255 Major, remembered the giant Trinity Church when Bill and I moved here. She must have been about 5 years old then. She remembered that big church that we go to hear Tafel music now. Mm-hmm. So they must have attended there. And my dad's family weren't in this neighborhood. They had come... about 1910 from Prince Edward County to Toronto, and that grandfather mainly was in the beaches area, so I think he was doing real estate and building houses, so I think that's why they stayed there and moved there.
And so you've been here, next year it'll be 30 years that you're
right. Yeah.
Have you seen changes in generally the ethnic population? Have you seen that? Yes?
My neighbor on this side was an Italian background, and she stayed here till she was very elderly. And the neighbors to the south, she's in her 80s, Mrs. Ho, so they're from China and Hong Kong. And they all grew up here. This Italian lady has since passed away, but she was here from 1960, I think. And then the Vosses, who were Dutch background, they owned this house and told me and Bill that there was, they owned it, and then there were Portuguese family before that. And the Negelbergs lived here maybe from the 20s to the 50s. And before that, we looked at the city archives, and there were a lot of British English names, World War I. And before that, we think there was a house on this lot in the 1870s that was a much smaller stucco house. And then there was a widow, Loan, I think was her name, that built this new house in 1889.
This new house?
Yeah.
So this house itself has had a lot of different people from different origins living here. You mentioned the fish store. I'd like to kind of go back to the stores and stay with that for a while. If you can think of, because you go back a long time visiting your grandmother, mm-hmm. and you've been here for nearly 30 years. If you think about the stores, we'll stay with stores for a while, on Harvard, on Bloor, on College, some thoughts, some memories about that, and comparing to what we have now.
I remember a variety store at the corner of, the corner of Robert. The southeast corner of Robert. I don't remember who owned it, or maybe it was on this side. Maybe it was where the Chinese are with the flower shop.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember anything about who owned that. I remember that one of my treats when I came here was to go over to Borden's Dairy to get an ice cream cone.
And where was that? Was that on Borden Street?
No. Borden's Dairy was where City Dairy was on the curve.
On the circle, right.
And where you see that sort of veranda-looking thing with the pillars was a sort of a porch where you could sit at, you know, ice cream type tables, oh, those little round tables, yeah, with the, yeah, wire legs.
Nice memories.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, yeah, that for sure. And I remember the little store down, I don't remember going into it ever, but the little store down Robert Street across from the school.
Yes. That was there till just about 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. With wooden, yeah, floors. Yeah.
I remember that. And what else? I really didn't get her. I mean, I'm just a little kid, so I didn't really, yeah, get around,
well,
that
but,
much.
But even since then, your experience, mm-hmm, with the stores on these streets, do you have any?
Oh, the pharmacy at Lippen, Wilcox and Spadina, northwest corner, which is now, I guess, a residence of some sort. But that was an active pharmacy, I remember. And I think my grandmother used to have her kids go there to buy her menthol lettuce.
To buy her what?
Menthol lettuce.
What is that?
Mentholatum. Universal cure.
Nice when there's one thing that cures everything.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's a very sweet, lovely memory. Yeah. Anything else about stores that either of you... I mean, you talked about the fish store that you missed when it, mm-hmm, was gone, and Harbor Bakery, which is still there.
I think everything's very much the same since we came here in 83. Yeah. We miss Kensington Kitchen Restaurant. I remember that. And I can talk about the 90s because I was helping with Harvard Village then. What we got going on several projects, so just stop me if you don't want to go in that direction. But we did this traffic maze, which we may or may not like the way it is, but we were the first neighborhood to do all these one-way streets to slow down the traffic. Because
I definitely want to talk about that, so please go ahead.
Right.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So they had it started north of Harvard, and we were working with Joan Dwaron and Olivia Chow and Jack Layton and great counselors at City Hall. This was 1991 to about 1995 when I was helping, and it took us about a year to get that going for south of Harvard. And at the time, they didn't do speed bumps. They've since decided that speed bumps are better than these one way at each corner with tree planters, mm-hmm, to kind of catch your eye and slow you down to make a turn. So we're still with this old fashioned system. But it was new then.
And so you were one of the people who
afraid,
worked on it.
Afraid we were, but Susan, two doors away, Susan and Bryn, and Winona and Peter Murphy and several neighbors just close around here helped a great deal. So, and then through that time was the Spadina LRT, Light Rapid Transit. Of course, they wanted it to be very rapid. And we had meetings for about 5 years with Metro Hall at the time and all the neighborhood communities as you go down each section, so that Chinatown and the neighbors down at Harborfront, each, they had their own meetings, and sometimes we all got together to talk over issues. But they wanted to slow the streetcar down, the businessmen, so people would stop and get off at U of T and get off at their stores and use their businesses. So the whole thing changed because of what the community was telling them. And of course, we wanted bicycle lanes. And
Back then.
And we fought very hard, and it didn't work out very well on Spadina. I think the bicycle lane that was marked has since been taken away, yeah, but Harvard has a better bicycle lane. They're going east and west. They've done a better job with that.
You're talking about something that's very dear to my heart, since I use my bike a lot. Yeah,
okay, yeah, yeah. Well, we need to revitalize that too, I suppose. And then Olivia Chow was so inspiring, and Joan Dwaron was a school trustee at the time. We got involved in neighborhood watch and having kids walk safely to school so their bicycles wouldn't be stolen from them, and all these different issues that were coming up. And we had another committee working on someone who was mugging people, and he lived right on Lenox. And we went to court and kept an eye on him for a while. Different things were going on like that that were quite
so you important. Actually knew who he was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've heard about Pizza Gigi, too. It's been here so long, and all the other businesses on Harvard look so great, and they're so responsible. But we had with Susan Purvis here, when she lived on Lippincott, they asked for not a private detective, a detective in disguise to watch that place for a year. And we knew about it back then, that there was drugs being traded from there.
How long ago are you talking about?
Well, this is early 90s, 91 to 95.
So you're saying 20 years ago you knew that there were drugs in there.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
And so you should talk to Susan about that. She really did most of the work on that one.
Well, and it's such an eyesore.
It is. That's what I said. You could tell by looking at it that it wasn't. What wasn't the local BIA noticing that or cluing into what was happening there? Why did it look like that?
And why did it take 20 years for them to really get on their back? Like, possibly. This is fascinating. All this is wonderful information.
Well, there
was. I mean, you were so connected with the roads and the transportation and the public transportation.
Mm-hmm. And it's just also, I guess the last thing before, I was so glad Gus Sinclair took over because it got to be quite overwhelming because then U of T printed a huge booklet on all their new developments and changes. And that was just about going along with the Spadina LRT as well. And one of the last things we looked into was a new college was building a new residence, which is another concrete building along the other side of Spadina. And then they built that new one with the long overhang
of
the capital O on it. And that was going up all at the same time. So U of T was really expanding and made this concrete wall, which doesn't really fit in well with the neighborhood. And we didn't do very well with communicating or getting them to think about that. So these issues are still ongoing. Well, we hope they have hopefully designated that college, the old building in the circle, as a historic building, but I see it's under construction now. So,
do you know Sue Dexter?
Yes,
because
and
she liaises,
was on all of that.
Yeah, and she liaises with Harvard Village and the university.
She managed to save one pine tree on the corner, but they had ripped down three beautiful historic houses next to the faculty club along Wilcox there without retaining anything of the nice appearance or even the facades the way they had done along Baldwin Street behind there. They had done such a nice job one block south of that by kind of integrating the nice old buildings with the new parts. But somehow we couldn't keep that conversation going, and other things were coming up at the time about Bloor Street, like the Metro store was going to expand, and that didn't seem to happen while I was working on it, but they were taking another nice old World War I or 1920 house and built that giant condominium just south of Metro, right on the west side of Spadina.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just replaced one house, the footprint of one house.
It's called the Mosaic now, I think, right?
And that was the same time as the new college residence that was being built. So we didn't win very many battles there.
Yeah. You're saying we're losing a lot of the charming old places for this.
Well, I realize there has to be changes, but there's a thoughtful way of integrating it. Or we're very well aware of when it happens in our interior streets. Even if they put up new townhouses, they can fit it in so it looks like the rest of the row housing or has some charm to it. Or even the same materials, the same landscaping, anything. But to change it as much as that is a lot. Of course, and then they have their... The city is allowed to do that on the main streets. So there's different rules for the heights on Spadina, Bloor, as opposed to our residential streets, too. Anyway.
Oh, no, that's...
I won't get... That's a long...
No, but that's all very...
A lot of topics.
It's a lot of topics, but it's all very relevant to what to what we're looking for, the changes.
That's right.
You've crossed a lot of... A lot of the different topics that I want to bring up, so that's
good.
Totally fine. Any comments about the food that neighbors, restaurants, any kinds of food differences that you've seen?
Oh, well, there's a lot of sushi now and Thai. That's a big change. I miss the Hungarian restaurants. There was one we liked that had Wiener Schnitzel. And there's only one left, I think.
Country style.
Yeah, country style.
Right. I used to like to come for the Dobbersch-Tort, the crispy sugar top.
Yeah.
But there were, I think, about four of them, and now there's just the one left.
Right.
So you remember those fondly.
Well, that was, I only think in terms of Bob Barnett was on the president of the Harvard residence group at the time, and he... With him, we made a list of about 300 restaurants. So that was in the 1990s period. And a lot of them changed within a year. And Brunswick Tavern changed into a new type of venue. It used to be more of a neighborhood with local musicians, and now it's... gambling and something else. I haven't even been in lately. But Bob Barnett was trying to keep the venue small so you wouldn't have huge dance halls and huge, large, noisy things, because they can stay open quite late at night. So he can tell you a lot more about that.
Well, I just left a message for Anna two days ago, so I hope to hear back from them.
Good. He'll explain it better.
Yeah. No, but that's very valuable, because I know that there's a lot of difficulty for people who live near Brunswick House.
Right.
Yeah. It's noisy, and the people are...
Right. We like the restaurants. We do use them once in a while, but I find, just a personal comment, is I prefer College Street, because there's still a few family restaurants and old places and things that are a little more neighborly somehow, rather than Starbucks, Tim Hortons, mm-hmm. the usual
the big
thing
chains.
That you can find anywhere.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I don't have that much experience in that area here.
What about your own street? Has it changed? And if yes, what are the changes?
I read Victorian Homes magazine, and I like the antique look to the houses, so I get sad when I see porches coming down and they aren't always replaced. But I am very glad to see we had quite an experience next door, so it's another large topic that a contractor bought the house joined to our semi-detached wall, and just last year we had a very noisy experience, because in taking down the drywall and renovating everything and having a generator motor going every day, it was so noisy I couldn't even be in my own home. That was for a whole year. So that's another whole topic
And they pulled out the transom
that
window.
I feel for the rest of my neighbors mm-hmm. and wonder how many people are going through
and
it.
And she was very worried about the transom window over the front door. And it's
the stained glass gone. Went yeah. out in the garbage, or I think he sold one of the nicest, even though there were three neighbors on this street asking for, you know,
that window.
To keep the
yes,
stained glass
absolutely.
Or preserve it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has done a very nice job replacing everything to code. And I can explain all that to you later. But and the new couple that's moved in are pleased with it, and I'm sure it's lovely.
So they have a modern
now.
Home.
A modern
totally and new home.
New four right. bathrooms and all the bells and whistles, I'm sure. New basement, and which we don't have. We still have our old basement and our old kitchen. So
I think your
it has to
true.
Happen, but how it right. happens, I think, is a big issue for Harvard, too.
And have you seen that with other homes here, too? That
yes, it's happening right now. Good friends are adding on to their back of their house now. And this was also difficult because there's four or five houses here that have no access to a back laneway. So when others, they can have trucks come in back. And here we had new dumpsters every other day, so we had to move our cars out of the way for these giant trucks and about 40 dumpsters changing over the year. And the street being taken up while people are working seems to be increasing. It's like more people are having to renovate. I mean, we had some bad fires farther down on Major Street and also eight houses on Robert Street. So that had to happen for them, too. Anyway, so that's a really big topic. I don't want to.
Well, but they're all
start.
Important.
But it's such a big change. As the older Italian lady who was all by herself, it was so quiet for so many years, and that was just a huge contrast for us. And I'm just thinking it must be happening to a lot of people as the older people move out.
Well, especially if you get, as soon as you said to me that a contractor mm-hmm. bought the house,
right.
trouble.
Well, that's
yeah.
trouble. That, yeah. to me, I didn't know was allowed to happen. In other words, up till now you've had families move in and you renovate a little bit at a time more quietly. But to have it done on that scale and be a person who was never going to live here or really care about the street really worried us. It could have taken on a whole different style, but luckily kept the front of the house. We can ask them to keep the front of the house basically in a style that fits in. We were lucky he just happened to do that, but he doesn't need to. He's not required to do any of those things. But, of course, you've got a great committee on Robert Street, Will Cox, and I think Bob Burnett Street. They're starting to think about historic designation and Lower Brunswick. So they've done really well. I'm thinking about that.
Well, and so many of us who live here care mm-hmm. about that, keeping
yeah.
the character and the nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any comments about, well, maybe you might know about this, Arthur, when you were coming around as a child, or maybe mm-hmm. you were too young. Any people working at home, any kind of home employment? Any thoughts about that?
No, no. I'd heard stories from my mother.
What did you hear?
Her friend, the Golds on Wilcox, the father used to make pickles in the basement and sell them.
Okay.
He had a wagon, I think,
and
sold them.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was somebody down the street, and I don't know whether they worked out of the house or not, who sold cloth scraps. What do you call it now?
Schmattes.
Almost, yeah, yeah. But my grandmother used to make my mother's dresses out uh-huh. of these scraps, and somebody sold buttons.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know whether it was out of the house or not.
Well,
Could have been.
Yeah. My mother went to Central Tech, and she was in art school. I just got to tell this little story.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people in art, the students in art school were debutantes. This is in the mid late 30s, and they had their own sports car convertibles, and they wore very fancy clothes. And my grandmother made these clothes by herself by hand. She just put a big piece of wrapping paper on the floor, draw out the pattern, cut it out, put it together with whatever she bought from this guy. And the debutantes used to ask my mother, "Who is your couturier?" She wouldn't tell.
So your grandmother was a very skilled seamstress. Did she also sew for other people?
No.
So it was just for her daughter?
I think so.
Yeah.
She ran a store on Wales for a while.
Uh-huh.
But that was, I don't know.
But that wasn't home industry.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But so the pickled one is the only one that you know for sure happened from home.
Yeah. But I got to tell you another little story. When my grandmother, when my grandparents lived, I said, at 144 Robert Street. My mother said, I haven't been able to prove it. And when they bought 124, were going to buy 124, the owner would not let my grandfather into the house to look it over because he was Jewish.
Oh, my God.
But he bought it anyway.
Oh. So he was willing to sell it to him, but not let him step inside the house.
Yeah. That's the story I got from my mother. Now,
well, that's the way
she
documented.
Got it. Yeah.
Did your mother give you other stories about what it was like being Jewish in this neighborhood?
Just little bits. One of them was that they didn't go above Bloor Street. That was an alien world, and they just didn't go there.
When you say alien, do you know in what ways?
I don't know. It just was a place they didn't go because the people were, I don't know, not friendly, or I'm not sure what the reason was. They just didn't go there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. Of course, the homes there are much larger, so I would think that in terms of affluence or lack of it, it was probably a wealthier population.
And Jews didn't live north of Bloor Street very, very often either, I think. The neighborhood was down here at that point.
Right, yeah.
But again, I can't document.
Well, but that's what you grew up listening to those stories. And so what you're describing, you can't document it, but those are their experiences.
Yeah.
So that's valid. I mean, that's good for our information.
Yeah, sure. Speaking of stores, I got to tell a dairy story. Do you know about Grimsby Dairy?
Nothing.
Rose didn't tell you about Grimsby Dairy. We did a bit of research on it. We got a picture of their truck. We got a picture of one of the milk bottles. Grimsby Dairy was down the lane, just down below Ulster, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Going through the... What's the name of the lane now?
Louis Lackey Lane now.
Yeah. It's near the bottom of the lane. It's a big square structure. There's a woman living in there now. In my mother's day, it was a dairy. It was owned by a guy who lived on Wilcox named Mr. Locke. And according to my mother, Mr. Locke had a wife who had a brown frizzy wig. And also, there was a very pretty girl who was... They had a little sales counter in this dairy. And a very pretty girl ran the sales counter. And she was, according to the local scuttlebutt, she was his mistress. Now, whether my mother knew that as a kid, I don't know. She may have found this out later. What else do we know about Grimsby Dairy?
The horses were
Locke apparently owned some kind of a barn, whether it was with the dairy or whether it was away from the dairy, and he used to tend pregnant mares for I don't know who, maybe for other dairies, I don't know what the story was, and he wanted the mares to be exercised, so my mother's younger sister used to ride the mares up and down the lane for exercise, and my grandmother one point looked out the back window and saw my aunt's head bobbing up and down behind the fence at the back, riding a horse.
So she didn't know that her daughter was doing it?
At the beginning she didn't know, but...
So she was a pretty good rider, I guess.
Oh, yeah, she was a tomboy. Yeah. She was pretty athletic, yeah.
But Locke had something to do with an association to do with horses.
Yeah,
we think,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
that's
found
something
that out.
We could research.
Yeah. We didn't go very deeply. We went back there and we met the neighbors. They saw us with our cameras looking at the place, and they came out and talked to us, and they said, yes, it was a dairy, but it inside has changed now. There was a... I think there still is a vaulted ceiling on the first floor. Mm. So whether that was for wagons or carriages or trucks or what, we don't know.
Yeah, and you can still see some old doorways and hinges and things.
The person living there wouldn't let us in. She said the place was a mess and whatever that. So we didn't get to see it.
So was there a barn there?
There must have been somewhere.
Like
there's also a building up at the north end of that lane, a square... block of a building. Could have been the barn. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's about
where it was.
Like a carriage house, but very plain now, just square brick kind of.
My mother
building.
Couldn't tell. My mother was always very bad with directions. My father used to say she couldn't find her way home from Bloor and Young. So she didn't really have any idea of exactly where these places were. But we did find the dairy.
You have a story about your grandma's cat used to meet her in Kensington.
Oh, that was the other grandma.
That
was the other grandmother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They lived on Center Avenue behind McLean's. And my grandmother would, I guess, get her shopping bags together in a little wagon or whatever she had to head out shopping to Kensington. And she'd get there, and there was the cat in front of the dairy store waiting for her.
Cat thought she was a dog, I guess. Usually you think of dogs that way.
Yeah.
From what you remember, and or you two, how well assimilated was the neighborhood? You go back farther, but your memories are not as clear because you were a child, and you came nearly 30 years ago. But what are your thoughts about people getting along, staying separated? Your thoughts and experiences.
I don't remember any note of contention at all on the street. Mm-hmm. The neighbors that my grandmother knew seemed to be very friendly and helpful and all that. Mm-hmm. But I don't have any other stories. I do have a little story about when my grandfather was still alive, so this had to be in the late 20s, the neighbor was Mr. Polishook, who I do remember. An old man, and he used to walk around sort of bent over with his hands behind his back, looking very pensive and all. And my grandfather used to say, Mr. Polishook, bulk ba stinkin' de hunt.
Meaning?
You're going to smell up your hands.
Because his hands were near his bum.
But that was a next door neighbor at 122.
That's cute.
Yeah. But, you know, these are kid stories that...
Well, but you learned them from the people who were living here in those early years.
Yeah, right.
And do you any comments about people getting along or
tensions? Well, all I can think of at the moment is it's a great neighborhood and so many good neighbors. But the Italian family next door started out all right with us, and you wanted to know about gardens, but they had... a whole vegetable garden, mostly tomatoes out the back, and they'd give us some tomatoes and share wine that they made, and she did baking, and she showed me how she made these special desserts and things that she had learned in Italy as a child. But we had a bit of contention with them because the son, about our age, wanted to raise pigeons, and he had a lot of pigeons and rabbits in the back shed here. And for us, just moving in 30 years ago as a young couple, it was hard for us to associate with that. The pigeons would all land on the back deck of our house, and it was too much. They were actually noisy at 5 in the morning, and then we'd have to talk to them and ask them. And the rabbits were very quiet. They were back in the shed, but there was some kind of odor that came from that we had ask about.
Oh, and the pigeons too.
They really liked their the country, like they were having some country aspects to living right here in the city. And the homing pigeons, they really wanted to race them. That's a hobby with some people, and use them as racing pigeons. So it ended up we had, and then as this Italian lady got much older and not so well in health and so on, and the neighbors on the other side had arguments with her, mainly about the fence line and keeping the trees from coming over her fence. In other words, the border of their fence was incredibly important. Mm-hmm. Unlike us, we didn't mind having our English garden, having bushes and flowers and trees overlap a bit. They really objected to that. So things over the years got a little more contentious.
Were you able to get rid of those pigeons and rabbits?
Yes,
because
the son moved away with the three little boys, and so there were only the two grandparents, the older couple, left after that. He took the pigeons with him.
And the rabbits?
Up to Woodbridge, new house, I'm sure. And the rabbits, too, were gone then. So that just happened.
So it wasn't related to ethnicity or religion or anything like that. It was just that they were smelly, dirty, and...
Well, it was something unusual for us to see in the city. And I remember, too, there were people... I think they had some kind of... they were smoking sausages, but I didn't know too much about them because they were behind our backyard. But that isn't happening anymore.
Yeah, so that could have been pretty smelly, too.
Right.
And smoky.
And we started with vegetables, too. We were interested in that when we first moved in. And then we changed us to a flower garden. And the Chinese-Canadian neighbors on the other side had some kind of oriental greens or lettuces that they were growing, and they've since changed to flowers. So as she's got older, she's not doing so much heavy gardening either.
So what you're describing is a lot of the vegetables have...
Right.
Vegetable gardens became
right.
flower gardens.
Right. Mm-hmm. And but Arthur and I were talking about this because, and I know in England they're thinking of, they're so tired of buying fruits and vegetables from other countries, they're thinking more in terms of going back to this homegrown vegetables. And mm-hmm. no matter how small your plot is or your community is, and I know Joan Doran was really working hard on community gardens and bringing all that back. So it may come back again, and I think that would be great.
And do you remember what your grandmother had behind her house?
No.
You don't remember that? Yeah.
There was a little backyard, but I don't remember anything growing there. I've got a few revisions to make here.
Actually, if you want to take a break, I'd like to put some tea on. Would you like that?
Well, let me turn this off.
My aunt was born at 144 Robert Street in 1919. The landlord was named Wittick. And the other story is the two old maids were selling 124, which my grandfather bought, and he was not allowed to go inside to see the house. He had to buy it as is. At the time he bought the house from these two old maids, there was a rumor that the city was going to break Wilcox Street through the house, but he was assured he would be well paid for the property. And I just found out that he came here to work for Eaton's. It would be about 1910. And Mr. Polishuk had 122 Robert, and there was an old man living there before who used to... my grandfather used to be called at all hours to pick the old guy up off the floor. He used to fall out of bed. And a Mrs. Dow used to look after him. What else? Susie Kaminsky lived on Major Street. The backyard's not far apart over the back fence, over the back lane. And the Goulds lived at 91 Wilcox. Mites directly calls him Gould. Miriam Levy lived on Robert near Harvard. Used to go out with Ben Lennick.
So I think instead of going through all this reading, I think what you're saying is that group was certainly a lot of Jewish people living in that part of Robert and Wilcox. Both,
Right. One more little story.
Please.
My mother and her younger sister, ages maybe 6 and 3, were sitting on a curb. Robert Street was then brick paved. And a little girlfriend was sitting with them, and a truck backed up and killed the little girlfriend. And my mother had snatched my aunt off the curb just before the truck got to her. Mm. That's the story I...
Well, I'm sure it's true.
Yeah, that would be about 1922.
Yeah. Same. We talked about the stores along these along the different streets. I guess none of you lived here. We're looking at patterns of dating, but you weren't living here, and you guys moved here after you were married, so we're not going to talk about dating. any changes in the heating systems since you've been here?
Oh, well, this house, there's holes in the ceiling for little stoves, probably. The stove pipe went up.
Stoves. Yeah, that's what
we can't find a mantle here at all, so we think... You think maybe it always had a furnace in the basement?
Well, there's another hole just around the corner here. And so there were two here.
Uh-huh.
One in either room.
Oh, so the stoves.
Yeah, pot-bellied stove.
Right.
And the pipes would have gone up there to heat the upper
floors. So would that have been coal?
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And then,
so it was probably down in the basement.
Yes, they would have delivered it through there.
Yeah. Under this window was a little square for a coal chute.
And that's where they would have delivered it in.
Right.
Oh, but that's quite lovely that you know exactly the route that the heat took.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can see it in your home.
Yeah. And then what? Oh, these are antique lights that we like. But when the electrician was up there, he found old gas tubing.
The gas pipes are all up still in the ceiling and in the floors. Yeah, they're all still there, disconnected, of course.
Yeah. But that's a clear evidence of the history of lighting and heating.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments at all about the churches, synagogue, institutions in the area, churches, synagogues? Healthcare.
Oh, well, Doctors Hospital dominated down the street, and they rebuilt it all into chronic care. But that's a big change, but the history of that and the space is still there. And then we got interested in the schools, and we were working with the schools for Neighborhood Watch, but Lord Lansdowne, you have a picture of it from your family, Arthur, was an old building and now has been replaced by, actually I think they've designated the round school of Lord Lansdowne as a historic, modern type of architecture to be noted, you know. And then we were just talking about the... across Spadina, because Rosemary Donegan wrote a beautiful book on Spadina. She talks about Spadina having a huge church where the Institute for Mental Health is. That was all rebuilt, and there was Tip Top Taylor's on the corner, but that was quite a giant Methodist church, and that was in Rosemary's book. A nice picture of that.
Well, and there's still a church on Spadina.
Yes.
Here, and then, of course, the one on Bloor Street.
Yes, and we were talking about Central Tech, because there are pictures at the city archives that it was a row of older houses before Central Tech. So there's a picture even before Central Tech went in that was a part of the neighborhood homes as well.
Oh, see, nobody's talked to me about that. So a lot of homes were taken down because that's a big block.
Yeah.
So a lot of homes were taken down in order to make the school.
What about that place down the street that's being revamped?
Yes, and luckily that's safe. And Mort told us that it was for nuns.
Yeah.
I haven't been working on that like Gus Sinclair and others have the history of that.
So where was this? Because I've heard people say nuns, but there was some...
It's like a barn down in the next block.
A brick. On the... building, that looks a little bit like a very plain church or something. Yeah.
So it's where the nuns lived or were trained, and they lived there together.
And they had something to do with starting that health center, I believe. Mm. I mean, that's where the idea came from. And then the new hospital came up from that idea.
There's a big plaque on the right in front of it on the grass now. Take 10 minutes to read. Yes, the entire history of it. It's there.
Is it on the east? It's on Major.
It's on the west side. The west side. It's just to the north of the new chronic care units.
Okay.
It didn't they refer to it as the chapel at some point?
Mm-hmm.
Connected to the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, the history is all there.
I'll have to look at it.
And then there's the Talmud Torah that used to be on Brunswick. You know about that? Near college.
So the Talmud Torah and the YMHA, was that there at the same
place? I'm not sure which side of the street Eden was on. I know it was down there.
Yeah.
I
was still living in Montreal at that time. I think what I'd like to just end up with is talking about the University of Toronto and Kensington Market, how it impacts or influences or what relationship we have with both of those institutions.
Bill works there.
Yes.
So.
Well, lots of students and professors clearly live in this neighborhood.
Right. And I went to UT. I was going back and forth on the subway for 11 years going to UT. And when I finished, then I moved here. And I could have
walked there.
All this time, but...
Do you feel it has any impact on us now?
On the parking situation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huge impact on parking because students and people coming to U of T will park here all day.
And Robert Street is protected because they don't allow parking. You get tickets on Robert Street.
Yes.
So Robert Street is protected.
Well, it's 2 hours parking here, but, you know, the police have to make an effort to come by twice and chalk the tires first and then come by again. They do it once in a while, but...
Yeah, we find there are some... U of T people parking in the day on Major, but it's not as much of a problem as Robert Street had. We have more of a problem Friday nights with restaurant people parking on Major Street. So the restaurant situation has escalated, and people want to park here to go to dinner. But
restaurants, you're talking
from
about
Harvard
Hall.
Street.
Oh, from Harvard,
Harvard. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, there's so many restaurants there, right.
But, U of T, we were talking about being on committees with all of their development, which is ongoing. And the ROM expanded, and Bill went through all of that. rebuilding. So... it has to do with the traffic. It's just that I got interested in it because when we first moved here, neighbors told me about children being hit or nearly hit and run over, and we wanted this traffic calming zone because of I don't know how many people go to U of T now. It used to be 40,000, but it might be more than that now. So they're all coming into this area, and of course make... College Street, Bloor Street really thrive for businesses, and Harvard Street as well. So we see them all the time when we go out to the restaurants and the bookstores. We like the bookstores. We like the effect. Computer stores are new, and they've really expanded
on college
lately. Yeah. Like the old paint store is going out of business, and it'll probably become a computer place. Or electronics. So,
and what about Kensington Market?
Ah, well, Arthur had a good story about that.
Oh, the cat story.
Yeah.
Already. I'm sure that both my grandparents shopped there all the time.
My neighbors use it quite a bit, but...
I really miss Perlmutter's Bakery.
Just leave that. Sorry.
Kensington Market.
Yeah, well, my neighbors use Kensington Market quite a bit, but... and you walk through.
I go down and get some things down there, but I don't get my fresh fruit and vegetables. I'm sure some neighbors use it more extensively than we do.
But we
very
like
nice,
it
very
the way
nice
it
to
is.
Have. Yes.
Yeah, we like the vintage fashion and the fact that they've kept chain stores away from it, and that it still looks like an old neighborhood. And George Brown College moved out. They've had some big changes too. And there was, we were helped by the center on Bellevue, was very helpful to our neighborhood and all these projects we had, because they have a community center right down there on Bellevue, just south of college. And the church there, which was such a lovely historic roof line to it, seems to be diminishing and sadly going downhill. Like the one at college in Brunswick, they took down the church, they left the tower and made the rest of it into seniors' apartments, so the churches there seem to be suffering a little bit. But we're glad they're still there, and that they have a good community. Also, there was a Kensington newspaper that helped us a great deal and put in our concerns about Neighborhood Watch or reports. And I think that newspaper's not functioning anymore.
I don't know.
David, I'm trying to remember the fellow's name that lived there and helped us so much.
Talking about Neighborhood Watch, what are your thoughts or feelings or experiences with security and safety in Harbord Village?
Well, my neighbor across the street just said someone had a lovely bench stolen off their porch this week, and it was her grandmother's bench, and she's really upset about it. So I'm afraid this is still going on. When I was working on this more than 15 years ago, I'd hear about this type of thing all the time. And I'm basically, if you have something on the front porch, it has to be chained, and a van could come up and take it. I'm not sure what's going on, whether it's antique dealers or metal dealers taking things away in a van, or whether it's people just trying to make money for drugs or other reasons to take things, or just pranks. You can't blame it on students, I don't think, all the time. Yeah. Because I think they would normally just throw something, or people coming out at pubs at night might throw something over the fence and you find it later. But
yeah,
not
but then,
necessarily
but you need to be able
it.
To carry something
right.
away, so you need to come with a vehicle most likely.
So I'm afraid, I'm not sure whether we need to really get into all those issues again. Remind people, do not leave your car unlocked and your doors unlocked. And most people, a lot of people here do leave their doors unlocked, so they're not too worried about it.
when you were a child visiting your grandmother, do you think she left her doors unlocked?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. What about your fence? You had damage to your fence a couple times. The picket fence in the front.
Oh, yeah, we did. We think vandalism once, but that's the garbage trucks.
You think?
So with the claw that they use, this great mechanical system, And they dump the big bin on top of our wooden picket fence. It's been getting damaged quite a bit. The new contractor next door, when he moved in the giant bins on the front lawn, he really tore off a corner doing that. So, yeah, but...
Follow the vandals.
The big difference, when we first moved here, everybody had a little fence. And it was mainly to keep dogs out, I think, and just a lot of blowing papers and bits of garbage. But now dogs are trained beautifully and they don't bother people, and I don't think fences and are much of a concern anymore. But we like the fences also because trucks pull up on the sidewalk or close to your garden, and people like a little fence to keep the cars and trucks right off your lawn, basically.
Didn't you have a story about somebody stealing plants off?
Oh, yes. Like, if you have a small, light, hanging basket of plants, they would disappear from our Italian-Canadian family next door. But if you have something heavier, something that's too hard to lift, that's okay.
What about your own feeling of security? If you're outside at night, would you walk home from Bloor and Spadina feeling comfortable, or would you not prefer not to do that?
I think this is one of the best places in Toronto because Bloor Street's always so busy and active, and I'm not alone as a lady walking down the street at night. But as I say, we had this one young fellow stealing things out of construction sites at a church, or mugging someone who was expecting a baby. That was more in closer to Bloor, and breaking into.
So there was one person that you were that you all knew.
Yeah, but I think I'm sure that's still ongoing because of things I just heard lately. I think there's still a lot of things disappearing.
I wouldn't say this neighborhood is any better or worse than really any other neighborhood. But it is, as Betty says, so lively on Bloor Street that there are people around all the time.
But
I feel perfectly safe.
But I heard a lot of stories that people didn't want to get involved phoning the police. But we got to know the community officers, and they're trained especially to talk to the neighbors. So if people would just report in things, it would help them to know what to look for. Like New Year's Eve or a Saturday night, there's a lot of vandalism to cars, which is still ongoing. They will kick off the rear view mirrors, and that's very expensive, and it leaves other dents that you can't fix, or they break a window, and that's just vandalism. But there were a lot of things that the parents had around the children's park. There was a fellow stalking 13-year-old girls. There was needles found on the top of the little shed in the garden there. And there's all kinds of issues around that when you have little children. So I imagine it's still going on quite a bit, and we have to always watch for these things. So,
before I turn off this machine, I'm wondering if there's anything that we have not talked about that you had thought about before I came and thought, this is something I'd like to talk about because I've seen changes or it's significant about our neighborhood. So is there anything that any of you would like to talk about?
Another store just came to mind, but it's in my high school days, the Smiths at Ulster and Brunswick. Jewish family. I went to school with Ronnie Smith. Can't tell you much about him. He's still around. But they don't own the store anymore. A convenience type store. Northwest corner. That's about all I can
tell you.
There
are a number of little corner stores.
Yeah,
and
you
can see.
That's still a convenience store.
Yeah, it's still a convenience store.
Ulster and Brunswick, Northwest corner.
Yeah.
You can tell with all the windows that they used to be stores.
Yeah. So either of you have anything you'd like to talk about, generally about our neighborhood as it was? I mean, you've been here nearly 30 years, the two of you.
Well, I think without the Harbor Village group, we'd be lost. It's just been fabulous to have it, keep it going and meet everyone in it. And I know they have a big party in the park every September. Yeah. And the Halloween pumpkins.
Isn't that wonderful?
All of that is so wonderful.
Yeah.
And it helps. It helps a great deal. Without that, I think the neighborhood would disappear in all the big development. And young people want to buy houses. I mean, you can tell by the prices and by the lineup to buy anything that goes for sale. Rather than condominiums, I think people want to live in a neighborhood, and I think it's important, and it's important next to U of T. A lot of staff people and ROM staff people live in this area, and we're glad to be
people
here.
People who like to walk and not be dependent on transit.
Right.
To walk to work, walk to grocery shopping, and walk to bookstores.
Yeah, and there are a lot of car people that like to live here and can enjoy it that way too.
Yes.
Or pro TTC people.
Well, thank you very much. Okay,
tomorrow. But just trying to gather my thoughts about Harbor area and why it's so important, but I think our identity is lost because we're next to a giant, which is U of T, is like an elephant, and Kensington, which had a longer history, the neighborhood to the south of us, and the Annex, which has a lot of writers, publishers, and newsletter, and are quite well known, and people like to say we're in the South Annex, but that's not quite true. So if Harbor needs to develop its identity, I think, and talk a bit more about its history.
Fabulous.